You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right, it's definitely Happy Hour time.
It is. It's we've been going Happy Hour in about, what, we're in an hour and a half of Happy Hour already?
Definitely.
Somewhere in there.
Welcome back, Curtis.
Hey, welcome back to you.
That's great.
It's good to be back. Trying to get my mic set up here. There we go. So, big news this week, I guess. So, we've had the Westy 12 release, which, you know, people who are, I guess, beer geeks who aren't on the West Coast are all aware of. But for us out here in Ventura, it was certainly eclipsed by Stone Brewing's Vertical Epic yesterday.
The Vertical Epic, yeah, and definitely lots of 12 yesterday. I'm sure your Facebook was blowing up with 12, 12, 12 messages and everything 12s. By the way, can you say the whole name of Westy?
West Veteran 12.
Yeah, that's better than I can do. I would just call it Westy for
sure. Well, and I was, you know, researching for what Westy is, and evidently Veteran is the town that it's in, and it's from West Veteran. Who knew? But the Abbey is what Saint Sixtus, I think, is the actual name.
Right. So they did a fundraiser, basically.
Right. Evidently, their roof was leaking, and about the only way that they can raise enough funds to put a new roof on it is to take advantage of Americans who are just chomping at the bit to get a hold of this beer, which is ranked, no matter where you go, it's certainly, you know, a top five beer, if it's not the number one or the number two beer ranked, you know, Beer Advocate or Rate Beer.
Right. And I was looking at Shelton Brothers, which is the importers of it. They said they sent like 7,700 gift packs, which sounds like a lot, right? But let's think about how big the country is. That's really not a lot. I was actually one of the people, I actually called Total Wine yesterday, and I felt really stupid because as soon as I called them, I asked, the next question was, do you have the Westy? And she said, no, we're sold out. And other people I know were calling up, and people were answering with the phone with, thank you for calling Total Wine. No, we don't have Westy. Thank you.
Sorry, that was just like the canned speech right out.
It was just like Westy madness yesterday.
If you're calling for the 12, no.
No, we don't have it.
I can imagine what how people were murdering that. Oh, I mean, yeah. It took me a few years to learn how to pronounce it myself too. Can I get the West La Verta?
Right.
I'm not sure what that is. It's some monks make this beer somewhere.
Anyway. Have you ever had it, Curtis?
I have. I'm thinking back. A good friend of mine who's kind of taught me the ropes of drinking beer, he had a couple, and we sat back and tasted it. And I'm certainly glad that I had the opportunity to taste it.
Right.
And it's like a lot of other overrated beers, maybe, if I can use that term loosely. And I mean it's a fantastic beer, but it was certainly overhyped to me. And so there was just no way it could live up to its I don't know, mystique.
Oh, right. Well, I think it was really interesting, the fundraising aspect of it. It was really cool. It was like nobody was supposed to make any money along the way. So not the importer, not the retailer. I think it was like $85 or $89 a six pack. No bars were supposed to get it. They didn't want you to break up the packs and sell each bottle. I saw some people that weren't abiding by that, but you know, that's not for me to, I'm not the police on that one, but I don't know who would police them on that one. There were definitely people selling them for over the asking price.
Right. This is a good chance for people not to get gouged.
Right.
Certainly. Because I mean, if you go to eBay, you're looking at, you know, you're going way over $100 for just a couple bottles having it shipped to you. You know, these people are inviting the wrath of saints on them if they bring it from, if they bring it from the brewery and resell it. Because I mean, whether it's verbal or written, it is understood that when you take this case of beer from the window at the Abbey, that it's for your personal consumption, and you're not going to resell the beer. So.
Yeah, there was a store in New York. I remember the story where he went there, took the oath, and said he wouldn't sell it, and then he did sell it. So I don't know what happened to that guy. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but he was definitely selling it outside of his store there in New York.
Yeah, there are so many other things in my life that that I bend the rules on that I don't need to invite any extra wrath by saying one thing and then going and doing the other. That's
going to do another thing. But definitely a huge, huge release. I was sad not to get my hands on any.
Right. You know, I'm curious as to if it's going to happen again. And I kind of think that it will. But, you know, these guys have been holding out for a long time. You look at Chimay, another one of the Trappist breweries. They brew over 3 million gallons a year. And Westy's down there at, I don't know, 300,000 gallons. I don't know. I mean, it's comparatively, it's crazy, crazy small.
Yeah, it's definitely smaller. And we don't know. It says there's a plan to export like 10 times as much as that. So we'll see. Maybe we'll get some more. I think it was definitely successful, so they'll probably do it again. I mean, I don't see why not.
Oh, so this was just a first round.
And this is the first round of 70,000 packs. So we'll see if we can. Hopefully, we'll get some more out here in California.
Get our hands on, yeah. Get the 6-pack, and then it comes with 2 collector glasses as well. So
that was definitely cool. But like you said, eclipsed by the epic vertical that was epic.
Especially out here.
12-12-12 stone vertical epic release.
Yeah, Twitter lit up. I mean, at 12-12-12, 12-12, and whether or not they were timing it on their iPhones like I was to you know, just enjoy this completely arbitrary moment in man-made history, you know, that I was sitting around and just watched it going, hey, yes, and then everyone who was at Stone for this incredibly epic. I mean, this epic food pairing where they had all
that was
well, they
insane.
Had
every
had,
single one, right?
Right. From what you were saying, there wasn't one in 2001, but there was from
222 is the first one. And from what I understand from direct from Stone guys, the 222 was a staff only a beer. Some of it has gotten out there. Obviously, some mm-hmm. of the Stone guys probably have sold their bottles or whatever. But that was the one that was not on the shelves. So if you have 2 through 12, it's quite the feat if you're not a staff member.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people who were hooting and hollering about having the 2 port, and that was the first one out of the way. But, I mean, this $150 and just that may seem steep, but just think about what you're getting in history. I mean, you're getting beers that are, 9 years old, 10 years old, and then each one of those beers, your pours, was paired with a small bite. So whether it was a dessert or an entree, a salad, whatever it was, they took the time to put together some serious pairing there. And yeah. if I could have been down there, I would have been there.
Yeah, I wanted to go too. Mm-hmm. Also, but it's definitely a really cool concept. Whether or not some of the beers held up, I mean, who knows? But some of them, they were all different. Every single year is different. The people that don't know about the Vertical Epic, each beer was released on its Vertical Epic Day, so it was 333, 222 was the first one, mm-hmm. all the way through 12-12-12, and some of them were really cool and interesting. There was some that were kind of, they had wine grapes in them, I remember, mm-hmm. I think that was like 10-10-10, some had like chili, and mm-hmm. This year's is what, a dark ale with spices.
Right, yeah, and actually, Barrel House still has some.
Yeah, we do. Everybody tapped theirs yesterday, so we all tapped ours yesterday, and I had a good time with it.
And I enjoyed a glass of that before the show, and it was that was something. You know, there's this Belgian something happening, cloves and licorice and 9%. So, you know, giving you a little flushed feeling before you go on the radio is never a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah, it's whoever has all of them, that's got to be pretty cool. I know Stone was inviting people who had any of the bottles to come down there and bring your bottles to kind of compare them with their cellared versions versus your home cellaring techniques. And I mean, just really, they really got intricate. I mean, it was a very cool event, and they were showcasing places that did it. Anybody else that had, you know, any kind of vertical that they had saved up, any bars that were selling it. Stone is very good at definitely at marketing and just creative ideas like this. It's amazing what kind of stuff they can think of.
Right, I think you know, when you're talking about inviting these people who had sellers and who had the whole lineup, these people are taking care of their beer. So I'm guessing that there probably wasn't much difference in the taste on those beers, just because these people are ones who are taking this seriously, you know. And so I'd be curious to see if there was any difference in that. Now, I take the regular beer drinker who forgot about it in the back of their closet over the last 10 years. And
right.
And I'm guessing that beer's probably not the best, but I'm with you. I've had a couple of them and I've loved them for the experience. And I think, you know, I mean, total speculation, but that's obviously the event and Stone was kind of looking for, that they knew that a beer with chili in it wasn't going to appeal to the masses. Not that any of their beers have ever meant to been, to appeal to the masses, but certainly somebody like me is not going to go and buy that bottle just because I don't care for chili beers as a general rule. So, you know, even the experience on that for me probably isn't going to drive me to it unless I'm paying $150 to find out what they pair with that beer.
Right, to do the whole set. That was pretty cool. There's also been some talk lately about who makes your beer and who makes the craft beer. And I noticed you posted something earlier today about the last domestic non-craft beers, right?
Right. So if you go to our Facebook page, Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis, you'll see a link there that the Brewers Association just put out. And for the most part, I think beer geeks know some of these. You know, Blue Moon is not a craft beer, although it is a perfectly fine gateway beer. I mean, this is I mean, when you look at it, certainly, I mean, we're all kind of giggling about this, but there's plenty of people who started off with Blue Moon and then moved past that. And so I appreciate Blue Moon for that, but to label it as a craft beer, that doesn't fly. And there are some good ones on there, you know, and you go into a grocery store and you see a brand name that seems mainstream, but something that you've never, ever heard of. You know, those could be the generally, you know, you're looking at a brewery in New Hampshire that nobody's ever heard of, which is a Budweiser brewery or whatever it is, you know. And so you got to kind of dig a little deep. So and not that there is, you know, if they taste fine, then drink the beer, you know. And I've said it for a long time, too, that I think the biggest thing about big breweries is that if they would just make good tasting beer, they would have the world at their feet, but they continue to serve us these watered down beers and just these beautiful ad campaigns. But, you know, unless they start serving us some good beer, it's not going to turn us.
Yeah. Well, you just killed all the sponsors that we could get. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. But, you know, talking about the gateway beer, that's definitely interesting, because I remember when Two-Buck Chuck was all the rage. You know, it was Two-Buck Chuck, and $1.99 wine, and all these people were going nuts and saying, this is ridiculous. It's making wine, you know, cheapening wine. And as a retailer, I looked at it as, you know what, if that's going to get somebody to drink wine that's never had wine before, then they're only going to, your curiosity is going to start wandering, and you're going to say, what else is out there? If I had this for, if this is what a $2 wine tastes like, well, you know, what does a $5 wine taste like? What does something else taste like? And so hopefully that is the gateway into, I hate to use that word, but it's definitely the stepping stone to the world of craft beer. So if somebody's having a Blue Moon or any of those, I think it's fine if that's the first thing they've tried. As long as, then after that, it's like, hey, what else is out there? Let me see what's out there.
Right, yeah, and there's some good ones on there too. You know, so you've got Blue Moon and you've got Shock Top, some of these ones that people are seeing in their gas stations along the way and in places where maybe they don't have a really good variety of beer. And thinking that this is a great tasting beer, you know, learn about what that style is, and then go to a good beer store and then pick some things along that in that style line. You know, Belgian Wits are beautiful beers, and I love them. In fact, our guest here tonight, Jason from Anacapa, they've almost all the time they've got a Wit on tap. So, you know, they understand that people are coming in off the street with an idea that that a craft beer is Blue Moon, and then we can show them that Blue Moon's a good starting spot, and then and you can build up from there.
Yeah, and again, another list that came out, right? Top 25 beers of 2012.
Yeah, that's
and again full of beers that we can't get.
Right, but you know, there's a couple from California.
Well, yeah, there. You got a Wookiee Jack from Firestone.
Right, I know, that's awesome. And then you know, they're not numbered, so it's not necessarily
it's just 25,
a rating.
Yeah.
But West Veteran is on there, and it's, you know, kind of tying everything.
16th anniversary Stone. That was cool. And but it is, you know, it's such a, we were talking about that last time, such a big country that there's so many breweries, we're not going to be able to get all of them here. And that's what makes it cool, actually.
All right. It's time for us to go to our first break. And since you're listening, you already know you're on VC Buzz Radio.
We'll be right back.
Beautiful Ventura. And you can go join the chat room, see what everybody else is saying. And when we come back, we'll have Jason Coudray, brewmaster from Anacapa Brewing.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right. Well, welcome back. Welcome back. So we're back here, happy hour with Joby and Curtis, and our guest tonight is Jason Coudray, brewmaster from Anacapa Brewing. Welcome, Jason.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So we were in a frantic fumble trying to get these silly vacuum seal things off of the growlers. I'm like, we got to get this damn thing open before we get some beer in us. What's going on?
Seems like we never had beer before.
I know. I mean, it seems like we should be able to break that seal pretty easily. So what's the deal with the seal?
The seal is basically our way of avoiding open container laws because when you put a screw top on a growler, technically it's an open container. Kind of depends what county you're in, but we just don't want our customers getting in trouble with the law, especially if the growler's full, because, I mean, that's the worst of it, right? You're going to get a ticket and you haven't even had a beer. So we just put a little, you know, sealed plastic piece on the top of it.
Well, as somebody who safely buckles in their growler when I'm driving home, I appreciate that. So that if sometime I ever get pulled over and that growler sitting on the seat next to me, I'll say, no, man, that's a vacuum.
Yeah, no, it's sealed.
I was just a bad driver.
Yeah. Well, my buddy's actually taken it a step further. In the trunk of his car, he's put a bungee like bolted into the back. So he actually has a line of growlers, and whatever brewery he goes to, he just takes it out, fills it, puts it back in line with the rest, and they're all like secured, unable to move.
Very
and,
nice.
Yeah, it's a very proper setup. Very
I don't nice. Know your friend, but I like him.
Right. He's a smart guy. So let's let's start at the beginning, Jason. So you know, you're in high school. I'm guessing you maybe saw a beer passed around somewhere. You know, let's start with your first beer experience. And of course you were of drinking age, but what was your first beer age?
Sip of anything, right? Actually, alcoholic.
I grew up in a French family. I mean, my grandfather came over from a boat from France when he was about 6 years old, and so it was never alcohol in our family was always treated as a sort of, you know, this is not a taboo, this is not a problem. You just treat it like an adult, and so, you know, you sit down to dinner with your grandpa, and whether it's a holiday, whether it's just, you know, he had the family over, he wanted to have dinner. You had a, you know, 3 hour long meal. Everybody talked. Children weren't allowed to leave the table. They sat there and participated. And everybody, from the youngest kids up to, you know, grandparents, everybody were going to have a little bit of wine with dinner. That was just part of it. And so I grew up in this mindset that, you know, alcohol was a complement to food, and it was part of, you know, good social culture. And so, I mean, in high school, drinking was not really this like, oh, we need to go out and get bombed, because I don't know. It just, that mentality was never really anything I valued or even saw as important. So moving forward, I went off to college, and again, that kind of persuaded into my life later on. I just wasn't the type of guy to go out and buy a 30 pack and blitz myself to the end of the night. I'd rather get a 6 pack of nice beer, and being a poor college student who was on scholarship and working multiple jobs, I kind of got to this whole, you know, I really want to get a, you know, some Sierra Nevada or something that reminded me of home, because I was at school back east. And I just couldn't bring myself to pay like $23 for a 12-pack of Sierra Nevada. I could literally feel my blood draining out every time I walked to the store. So, yeah, I started homebrewing. It was one of these sort of, I think I can make this, right? Sierra Nevada were homebrewers. And it just sort of snowballed from there. My roommate was a biochemistry kid, and I was in environmental science. The two of us were both kind of inclined towards procedural work. And by the end of our senior year, we had like a rotating fermentation cycle going out of the closet in our house. We would have a batch of bottles coming out every week, and we had like 4 or 5 carboys fermenting at all times. And so every time a beer was tapped, we knew we had another week to make that last. And so that was what we were drinking at night. That was what we would have friends over.
Yeah, I bet you guys were popular.
Our house, we had to get locks on our doors. Yeah, people were definitely coming in. There was a couple times where bottles went missing.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
yeah.
That's one of the things that I can't believe I never thought about until I had graduated from college, and thinking of the money I could have saved. But just having that in my fraternity room would have been something for me, for sure.
We definitely set up a little like cash jar at the door, and the people were coming in, we're like, you know, help us buy our next batch of ingredients.
Right. Donations, of course.
Yeah, clearly. Right. We didn't have licenses to sell anything.
No.
Technically, they were buying grain, though, so I'm not sure if alcohol laws apply or not. But yeah, it was just sort of a fun social thing we did when it was negative 40 outside and you couldn't go out because, well, you were going to freeze if you spit on the ground, type of stuff.
So what was the local beer that you would, if I mean, you obviously bought some local beers there.
Yeah, too, I definitely got well-versed in kind of the New England microbrew scene, which was kind of cool. Harpoon out of Boston, they make some pretty decent stuff. They have a really nice IPA. Mm-hmm. Magic Hat, before they got bought, that was kind of my little badge of pride from being on the East Coast when Magic Hat was still completely independent, funky. They were the, like, you know, Hayden Ashbury Street of San Francisco on the East Coast, sort of crazy fun beers.
All right, Burlington's a crazy, I mean, that's just beautiful anyway.
Burlington's a fun town. They have a good beer culture there.
So who bought Magic Hat then? I'm curious about that.
I don't know.
I think it was Pyramid. And then it's actually, it was on our list today. It's actually North American Breweries.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So Magic Hat was on that list?
Yeah, yeah. North American that? Breweries.
Well, so no, yeah, Magic Hat.
NAB.
Yeah, Magic Hat partnered with Pyramid and Mac Turnahan's, and this was pre-financial crash. Yeah, the three of them were going to do this, like, we're going to distribute just the three of us. We're going to become a nice kind of microbrewery cooperative. And then the hedge fund that owned Magic Hat pulled out as soon as the economy tanked. And so their brand got bought, and I think it was like 75% of their brewing staff were gone within a week. They either quit or were laid off. And so, of course, now New England is flooded with a lot of really good brewers. One of my friends, she was a sales rep for Magic Hat when we got her out of school. She ran all of DC as their main sales rep. And when they got bought, it was just like the whole company was up in arms. They were pretty hurt about it.
Yeah, I think most of the stuff we get is made up in – well, we only get Magic Hat, was it, number 9?
Yeah.
So Magic Hat for forever here was like one of those, like, oh my God, do you have Magic Hat? Do you have Magic Hat? I mean, everybody who had been to the East Coast or who's lived there was always asking for Magic Hat. It was huge. Yeah. Even for a small brewery, it was like, I think it was infamous.
And just they were very funky, and they did really cool things. Like they had a single chair ale for Mad River Glen, which is a ski resort, the only ski resort left in the country that only had a single chairlift. So you rode it by yourself. And so they made a beer that you could only get at the ski resort. And I think, early on, I think it was someone from the company wanted free ski passes.
Right.
So they made a custom batch. They made it like once a year, and you could only get it in the tavern at the ski resort. And well, so
yeah, you got to have something when you're riding up by yourself.
Yeah, right.
So you all this great beer out there, you're making your own beer. And what do you do after that?
Well, I came home. I mean, as much as I like the East Coast, I'm a Southern California guy. I grew up here in Santa Barbara, Ventura, and I knew that, you know, it was good to get away and see the world a little bit. I traveled while I was in college, too. Came home, and it was about time to just, you know, I worked with the family for a little while, and I was here in Ventura trying to see what I could do as a homebrewer. And luckily, there's Vibe, the Ventura Independent Beer Enthusiasts, our local homebrew club. And I jumped into the club right kind of as they were hitting the ground running. And it was probably the smartest group of homebrewers I've ever encountered. They are, let's be honest, half of them are Amgen lab techs and, like, you know, biochemists. So they're all well-educated.
Right.
And it was just a really good fit. I got in with this group, and from there, they were teaching me a whole bunch. I was learning a lot of technique and styles, things that as a young homebrewer you might not pick up on because you're just all about big hoppy beers and the subtleties of Belgians and a few things I never would have come across if I hadn't been for the club. And then from there, yeah, we actually did the BJCP program, which is a beer judge certification program. There were about 6-7 of us in this class. Basically, from the Vibe group, we all met once a week for like 3-4 months. Just rotated from different people's houses and basically tasted every style of beer that is recognized for competition. Studied what makes it distinct, what type of yeast, different ingredients, and just kind of built a beer culture in this really small group. We all took the exam. We all did really well. I mean, we all became recognized judges. And out of that, I think 2/3 of that course, we all now work in the industry. It was it was this really funny group. We had a couple of guys that were, Adam Ball was the former brewer at Anacapa, who that's actually how I became friends with him and started working over there. But Luke, another one of my friends, he's now a sales guy for Surf Brewery. Mm-hmm. And Paul, he ended up becoming a brewer up at Telegraph. And so it's just, you know, we a bunch of guys that were just sitting around learning about beer. 2-3 years later, we all now see each other again at these beer festivals, and it's the same close-knit group, so it's kind of fun. It's just a testament to what Vibe can do. It's a really good homebrew club.
So you met Adam Ball in the club. And then how did that, I don't know, I mean, how did you kind of sidle into... a brewing job at Anacapa?
Well, I'd like to think it's because I'm so charming and I make such great beer. But the reality of it is it's right about that time is when my girlfriend moved out from the East Coast. And she had been a bartender for a while. And so I was kind of, you know, getting to know Adam. And we were doing the beer judging. And I'd been, like everybody in the club, trying to get in and work at Anacapa. And for some reason, it had come up in conversation that he had a beer festival he had to work some weekend. And he just wasn't looking forward to it because he and his girlfriend, Casey, and now his wife, they always get stuck behind the taps and they can never enjoy them. It's basically a work day for him. And I, you know, as an ambitious young guy, I said, well, you know, why don't my girlfriend and I come along? If you can get extra passes, we'll happily, you know, hang out and you guys can pour and, you know, you guys can go off and drink and Emily and I will pour for you. And me, of course, conniving a little bit, knowing that this was a way to be represented with the brewery. But it ended up, you know, his wife now and my girlfriend hit it off. And so the two of them went off for a while. So I just sat behind the tap handles talking to Adam for a good 4-hour festival. And at the end of it, he was like, hey, this was a lot of fun. Like, you know, we got another one in 2 weeks. You want to do it again? And it just sort of snowballed from there. He, about a month and a half later, I was going in, mashing out for him and just doing whatever grunt work I could around the brewery. And that went on for, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months or so. And then kind of hit a busy patch in my life. I wasn't able to spend too much time with him. And I was just, you know, keeping in contact here and there. And then I get a phone call out of the blue. And he says, hey, you know, Casey and I are moving back east. Do you want to interview for the job? And it kind of floored me. I was like, you know, I was hoping to, you know, maybe become your assistant. And he's like, yeah, we got to leave. I gave my 2 weeks notice. I'm on good terms with the boss. I want to make sure I find someone who's comfortable with. But I'm leaving. Like, wow. we put a pro brewer out, but you're the first person on the list. Do you want to come in? And I just, yeah, exactly. Right.
Were you the only interview? Do you know?
Me and one other guy. And I was the second one they interviewed. And Danny called me. I think I interviewed at about 4 PM. And he called me at 8 o'clock the next morning and said, if you want it, it's yours.
Nice.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's,
that's one of the stories I like about, the craft beer industry too, is you hear a lot of these similar stories where somebody comes in and they're mopping or they're cleaning out the kegs or they're in the keg line, they're whatever it is, and then they just keep moving up, and the people who want to move up, those opportunities are there. You've got to have some kind of initiative like you did, you know, to get your foot into the door, but those are there.
It's persistence is huge. I mean, there's everybody after one pint says, yeah, I want to make beer for a living.
And right, of course.
Until you really are there sweating into the bucket, drinking all this like hot grain out, do you really realize that it's...
So I've been there several times talking to Jason, and it's, you know, you're looking at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, somewhere in there. And, you know, he's been, you know, waist deep in a mash tun for 3 hours already by that time. Well, 5 hours by that time.
Yeah, and, in and out before
right.
anybody
and,
else is in there.
And
right?
he's, you know, and he's pulling the grain out, and he's in these giant buckets full of spent grain and everything else. So, yeah, the glamorous life is not what a brewmaster is. Yeah. That's for sure.
And let me, I'll be honest too. Anacapa, I love it. It's a funky old system, but there are definitely some disadvantages to working on it because we are running a restaurant in the exact same floor space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My brew days start at about 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be wrapped up by 11:30 every day. And it's difficult when you're trying to still not have to work on a normal society lifestyle. You know, you got a girlfriend, you got family, and people who work a 9-to-5, you're getting up really early, but then they still expect you to be up later at night. And so you're kind of, there's a lot of days where you're just dog tired. And then,
pretty tired.
Yeah. It's part of it, you know?
It's definitely a labor of love.
So let's talk about some of the beers that you've had then. So you become the brewmaster, and what's your first beer, and maybe kind of, tell us what's happening that, what beers you're brewing now that you're the most excited about?
Oh boy. So when I first started there, part of the whole, you know, Adam leaving under good terms and making sure that Danny's business was still intact and going well was finding someone who understood that Anacapa's got a pretty solid core following. We've got a lot of really good regular people that come in all the time. They have certain beers they love. And so, yes, I get to experiment. I get to make kind of whatever I want, but there's, with that is the understanding that, you know, if 90 people in a week come in and want to taste Santa Rosa Red because they love it, it's one of their regular beers, you got to make Santa Rosa Red. Mm-hmm. And so it was this finding this nice middle ground between keeping old recipes going, modifying them, you know, I can't get a certain hop anymore, grain suppliers change, whatever it is, but still relatively maintaining the integrity of a lot of these beers, and then balancing that with oh my gosh, I just tried this great Belgian. I want to make something like that. And going off on a whim. So right off the bat, I started with a pale ale just because Anacapa had never really had one. And I felt that's one of my just go-to styles. I think there's, as much as I love IPAs, they're going to knock you on your butt after a day. And so something about a nice quaffable 4 to 6%, well-hopped but not so bitter that it cleans your palate out beer, I feel it's just a really, really good style. And so I put one of those up on the board, and that's been in pretty regular rotation. I got actually have a really good batch of it coming out, hopefully in the next week or two. As soon as the ESB we're drinking tonight runs out, I've got a, it's called the Pissy Pelican Pale Ale. And this batch we put in, gosh, Scythos, a couple other really nice aromatic hops, kind of in the same type you might use in an IPA, but not dry hop. So it's just all sort of in that, that late boil additions.
So like the Scythos, is that a Southern Hemisphere?
Scythos is a hops union blend that they basically put out because we just cannot get Amarillo and a few, and Citra and a few of these other wonderfully sticky, fruity hops. And so again, being a small brewery, we don't contract. And so we're just kind of buying hops on spot buy, and it's whatever they have available at the time. And so this last batch, this last time I ordered hops about 4 or 5 months ago, Ellie, one of my, you know, my hop representative, she said, you know, we have these great, it's a blend, you know, and some people don't like blends, but she's like, you know, we made this specifically to kind of give you a sense of this. And I feel like hop blends are one of those things that if you make a beer specifically with one hop blend, you're kind of taking out the brewer's work because you're letting somebody else formulate what it should taste like. The minute you start adding that with other hops, you're doing the same thing any other brewer would do. You just have one of your hops being, you know, combined from other stuff. So,
right. What's the aroma profile on that?
Yeah. On Scythos?
Yeah.
Scythos is going to be very similar to Citra. I mean, you got passion fruit and citrus and just borderline resinous, but very, very nice, pleasant.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's, is that your favorite style to bake then, Jason?
Pale ale. Pale ale's up there. It's, you ask me that any given week and it's going to be a different answer.
It's going to be a different beer.
Yeah. I mean, my girlfriend loves sours. That's one thing that I play with, I dabble with. I wish I had barrel aging capacity and the ability to make some really wonderful old sours. But again, I'm skeptical of doing that in a pub restaurant where we turn beer so quickly. And, you know, 2 weeks later, I might be on a lager kick where I really want to make a nice amber bock or something dark. And,
so. So how much beer can you make? Can you just talk about that? I don't think most people know or understand.
We run a 7-barrel system. So 7 barrels, 31 gallons to the barrel is, you know, 210 gallons roughly. There's loss here and there. So we're turning out 200-gallon batches. And depending on the style of beer, that'll last us anywhere, excuse me, from, say, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks on an IPA if we put it out, to maybe a month on the stout, something a little darker that doesn't sell as quick. And so in the course of a given year, I'm doing, I don't know, 60, 70 batches of beer. And, you know, of that, probably 35 of those, 40 batches of those are going to be our regular core beers, our Seaward Golden, our White Cap Wit, Santa Rosa Red, Porter, Stout, things that just, you know, you got to keep them warm, especially if someone walks in off the street, they need to get a blanket beer and they want to get a sampler. They want to try all the different styles.
All the different styles, yeah.
You got to cover the range. But then, you know, the other 20, 30 batches of the year, I've got seasonals, I've got just random creations that come out.
So you're looking at one and sometimes two beers a week that you're brewing?
Yeah, usually one to two brews, at least one brew a week, usually one to two brews a week, which two brew weeks are busy because for every brew, you've also got a day of transferring, you've got cellaring days, you've got cleaning work. Because, I mean, given the work window that we have at the restaurant, you're pretty much done at 11:30 when we open the doors for food. So it's, you know, brew days are long and start early. Transfer days, you can get started about 7. You still got to be wrapped up by 11:30. So, yeah, it's a fun gig.
So then, let's talk about the beer that we're drinking right now. So we've got, is this the WTF?
This is the What the Fuggle. yeah,
the best name there.
We ran out of space on the board, so it gets abbreviated WT Fuggle. But yeah, it's an English style pale ale. Again, a little darker, a little less aromatic than, say, you know, the core pale ale style that I really like. But
well, like less aromatic on the hop side, but there's still a huge malt nose.
Yeah, there's definitely a great malt nose.
Yeah, and I mean, in traditional English beers, you're just going to get that earthy kind of soil character that comes through, and you can't get around English yeast that just always is there. And
so among us sitting around the table here, We know what Fuggle is, but can you explain what Fuggle?
Fuggle is a noble hop. It's an English varietal. It's one of these old traditional hops that just sort of, you know, the vine grew in, you know, the United Kingdom, what was at that point England, and it just became ubiquitous with all beers that are English. Kent Goldings are up there as well, but for the most part, if you smell an English beer, it's probably Fuggles that are coming through. Mm-hmm. They're just earthy, a little piney, grassy. I'm trying to think of some of these other words that usually get thrown in with it. I hear people use it as, oh wow, it kind of tastes fuggly. Like they it's so common they even use it as a descriptor for other hops. But yeah, it's got a.
And did you say this was an ESB or English pale? What did it?
ESB again. You know, that line between those two categories is kind of in the eye of the beholder. English pale ale, extra special bitter. They're
okay.
You know, which and more either way, but. Again, it's bitter. It's got, I think it's about 40 IBUs, 35 IBUs, somewhere in there.
Yeah, there's a nice nice herbal bitterness in there, in the beer.
The color is sort of a light amber, sort of, I would say definitely amber.
Yeah, there's a little bit of caramel malt in there.
Caramel malt. You can definitely taste it in the
We use almost all Maris Otter-based malt, so it's all English-based malt, which tends to be a little darker, a little more bready than, say, like an American-based malt. And so that just adds a little more complexity, a little more color to it.
And the reason that it's a little darker, the malt is?
Well, it's roasted longer, the character of it. It's just, I think it's honestly partly to do with the soil it's grown in. Okay. I mean, and the varietal of the grain.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're going to have, like an American base malt is the yellow. Most possible starch you can get, least amount of color. And that's going to produce a very high sugar extract value. Maris Otter malt tends to have a little bit lower extract value, but a lot more character flavor, a little more, you know, the darker the malt becomes, the less sugar you get, but the more flavor you're going to pull out of it. And so if you use a slightly darker base malt to make up most of the beer, you're going to have a little bit lower alcohol content, which is also synonymous with kind of English style beers, but it will, it's going to bring the flavor up a little bit.
All right. Well, this has been a pleasure.
Yeah,
appreciate you bringing in some beer and talking and letting everyone else know too what's happening with you, kind of your background and what's going on at Anacapa. If you're interested in trying What the Fuggle, make sure you come down here to Main Street.
Yeah,
Jason,
we're
you got the
we're 472 East Main Street. We're kind of right at the corner of California and Maine.
Right.
And I think we're kind of a staple now. We've been here for 13 years now. It's kind of fun. We're busy most nights of the week, which is a good feeling, you know. It's a little pat on the back for our owner. He does a great job with the food, and
right.
You know, at least people are telling me the beer's not horrible, so I like that.
Yeah, and it can and try to say hi to Jason. I mean, unless you're there at 11:30, you probably won't see him. Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you see me, I'm bouncing around. I'm usually climbing tanks or looking kind of disgruntled because I'm changing gas lines or something. But
if he's still there, then that means something happened.
Yeah.
And there are some problems to take care of.
Yeah. Well, catch me when I'm sitting down at the table.
Yeah. Can
I'm
they catch you on your off time?
Yeah. If you catch me sitting there, I'd love to talk to you and kind of share what we can, because the whole point of craft beer is sharing the love, teaching people about it, and spreading this virus that we're all infected with, because it's a good one. It's fun.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, we're gonna hit our second break here, and stick around, Jason.
Yeah, stick around, Jason, for our last call.
Right, got a special beer to break out when we get back.
Don't be so slow. I got time for one.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Tomorrow morning, Sunday, I'm gonna be
almost. Oh, perfect. Curtis just popped a nice bottle.
Time for last call.
What do you got there, Curtis?
I have St. Bernardist Apt 12, and sticking with the Westy 12 vibe that we had going here at the beginning of the show. Some people may not realize that the Wautah, I'm trying to think of what is Wautah, the brewery. Anyway, they brewed the Westy 12 for many years until the Trappist decided that, no, you can't brew off-premise anymore, and you've got to bring it back inside the walls of the monastery. So they took it back from the makers of St. Bernardus Apt 12, and lo and behold, you know, here comes St. Bernardus with a 12. Crazy how that happens, I guess, you know.
I'll start pouring while you're talking.
So Joby's pouring that. One thing I want to say before we get too crazy and I forget this week is that if you know you've got a night out like I do tonight, make sure you give weirddriving.com a look, and make a reservation. They'll come with a couple of people. They'll pick you up. You drive to wherever you're going. They'll bring the car over. Some drivers, they'll drive you and your car back home. So it's a great way to get home safe, especially after you're drinking
10%.
A 10% quad here that's being passed around. That
he's loaded. Hey, he's gone.
That is absolutely right. It's coming on that time. Last call. So we'll be getting home. Make sure you get home safe tonight. And as everyone's kind of giving this one a sip, you know, I haven't had it poured in a glass that is this thin at the bottom. Usually it's in a chalice. And right. So I don't hardly ever get the just those kind of copper, deep copper highlights. Generally, I see brown when I'm pouring it into a chalice just because it's so the base is so wide, so you're looking through so much. But that's a beautiful beer, highly effervescent. Anyone got anything to say about this one before it goes on?
It smells great.
It just reeks of beautiful Belgian smells.
It does smell really good.
The Belgian. So if you get one of the nice things about St. Bernard's Sap 12 is you can get it just about anywhere. And if you look at Rate Beer or Beer Advocate ratings, you know, you'll see the Westie 12 sits at 1 or 2 somewhere in there, and St. Bernardus is generally in, like, the top 25 anyway. So, you know, these beers that you can't get and you're paying $85 for a six-pack, you can go pick up a $7.50 for whatever. Yeah, $10.99, whatever it was, and have a beer by my standards, perfectly acceptable substitute for the Westie 12.
I feel like they're doing a really good job of showing how you can make good Belgian beer on a very macro scale. The fact that they are distributing to as many places as they are, and it is still holding up to that very traditional Belgian mark that I don't think anybody from the Trappist world would really criticize this as not being of similar. Yes, it doesn't have the religious monastery walls holding it in, but the beer itself holds up just fine.
It does have a monk on the label, just in case.
It does, and that's one of the things that...
and a cross.
Yeah, that don't get confused between an Abbey beer and a Trappist beer. So, I mean, there's plenty of Abbey styles, which right. is, I think this even says Abbey Ale on it, you know. But if it doesn't have that little Trappist kind of shield triangle thing on it, then it's not a Trappist beer. But that doesn't diminish it. That just tells you that the beer that you're buying, the money from that beer is going to help, you know, keep the monks alive and pay for social, whatever their social causes are. This one, however, is here for our pure enjoyment. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's still made by the monks.
Probably not anymore. I think it's a commercial. I think it's a commercial. Oh yeah, when it was at St. Bernard's, they had a monk brewmaster that would kind of oversee everything. So when we were getting ready for this, and I was looking at the Trappist monasteries or breweries. Anyway, there was I'm coming from a time where I remember five, or six, and then there was La Trappe every once in a while that kind of showed up. Those were six that were in Belgium. Then there was one in the Netherlands, and now there's one in Austria that is considered underneath that.
Yeah, there's one in Austria, and then there's going to be one in Northern California if Sierra Nevada, and if they finish the program that they had, which was their Ovila. Have you had that one?
Yeah.
So that's supposed to be the eighth now or seventh?
That'd be fantastic because, I mean,
generally, and you can actually visit it.
Right, and generally you think, you know, old world kind of Europe, you know, monastery, but it's the Cistercian, I think is how it's pronounced, order of monks. And so wherever they're at, they're all over the U.S. too, but generally they're making cheeses or breads or whatever it is. There isn't any right now that's making wine.
Yeah, the story is pretty cool. They're up in San Francisco, and I guess. I want to say it was Hirsch of the Hirsch Castle of Fame, and he brought back the whole monastery in pieces.
That's right.
And they're going to rebuild it with the help of Sierra Nevada. And so the Ovila beers were all a fundraiser also for to help put that together. And when it's open, it'll be an actual Trappist monastery with brewery. So right now they're making it at Sierra Nevada, but once it's all finished, you'll actually be able to go to the brewery, the monastery / brewery, and get your beer. And so that'll be really neat when that's all done. I don't know what the target date is.
So the Ovila was the monks that were brewing at Sierra Nevada then.
Right. It was a Sierra Nevada beer, but in collaboration, right.
It probably said that on the label.
But that's okay.
And after drinking that $7.50, you know, it's a little fuzzy, I guess. But
yeah, no, that's fine. That's but fine. It'll be really cool to have a Trappist monastery here on the West Coast.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be all right. From a brewer's standpoint, what are we talking about with malt? I mean, this has got to have a boatload of malt or fermentables anyway. So
yeah, I mean, traditional Belgian styles are usually going to bump the alcohol up, especially on something like this, like a pseudo quad or a, you know, double quad, whatever you want to call the line. There's probably some candied sugar or something. You get that kind of syrupy, caramelized sweetness to it. I mean, again, good Belgian beer should be using Belgian-based malt. You'll usually find something like Special B, which is, again, a nice kind of Belgian caramel. It just has this almost raisin-like character to it that just comes through. And, again, when you smell this, it's just got this wonderful smell to it.
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of I get that like a plum flavor, you know, and that's – and the raisins, plums, but it's that – what is it? Dark fruit kind of
dried, dark.
Candied fruit, candied sugar taste, Yeah,
it's a good one.
And so, and these fine bubbles, how – you know, that's the one thing I really like about the Belgian beer. Obviously, it's the yeast that they're using, and these the fine bubbles that you get in the –
Well, part of that too is just the fact that they're all bottle conditioned.
Bottle conditioned,
right? If you're going to put something on draft, you're going to force it through a carbonation stone. You're going to carbonate the beer. It's going to pour these kind of big, nice, foamy head, but it's going to dissipate out. If you bottle condition, the yeast are just they're there. They're forced under pressure. They're producing gas in much little smaller aerials, and they come out in the beer in this long lasting, creamy head that just sticks around. And they find these tiny bubbles in your mouth that just add to the Belgian style.
All right. Well, we're looking at we've been planning and getting ready for the next few weeks coming up, and excited to let you know that next week we're going to have
we got James Carling from Ventura Limoncello. So that'll be fun. We'll shift gears a little bit. Right. We went wine and then beer, and then we're gonna go a little liqueur next week. We'll talk about how it's made and what is limoncello. And things like that. It'll be a great show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because this is an area where, I mean, obviously my beer knowledge and is where I feel the most comfortable talking about. And then wine, I think I can carry on or at least ask a good question every once in a while. But liqueurs, and I have no idea what goes into making them at all. So
it'll be great. We'll get to ask James all the good questions and taste some limoncello next week.
Right. I am. We're looking at going into and then going into February. So I'm trying to think of what we have coming up on that. Coming up in February is Valentine's Day. Try and pick out some Valentine's cocktails.
Valentine's cocktail. And then right now, just with the holidays coming up. So we'll have next week. We'll have limoncello, and then we can talk about some holiday cocktails.
Right, and I'm jumping January.
Yeah, you're going. You're going to February.
What's
already.
Happening? I don't know. I skipped January.
We still got to do Christmas and New Year's.
I know. So we'll definitely be teaching you or telling you where to go to get your drink on for those holidays coming up. That's about it right now, I guess. So we'll give it a good shout out here for Jason.
And yeah, we want to thank Jason from Anacapa and say hi to Danny and. And definitely thank Danny from Anacapa Brewing.
Right. Yeah, well, guys, we appreciate you letting us come on. It's good fun to kind of just talk to you and basically talk about beer. It just helps us build the culture a little bit. So it's always fun to hang out with local people who appreciate it.
Yeah. Right. And get down, you know, next time you're on Main Street, you know.
Stop in for a pint.
Hitting the thrift stores or the boutiques, whatever it is, down the way, come in for a beer. It's all good for a beer.
We have a classy downtown, don't we?
Yeah.
I tell you what, the thrift store can build, can work up a thirst. And so, you know, just wash your hands before you get your pint lifted up.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today on Happy Hour. I'm Joby.
And I'm Curtis. And we'll catch you next week.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.